You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Floyd Little was a three-time All-American at Syracuse. He's a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. And after turning pro, he retired from the Denver Broncos with the seventh most rushing yardage in NFL history. But his biggest obstacle on his run to the National Football League's Hall of Fame wasn't the brutal nature of the game, the powerful linebackers, or the viciously athletic defensive ends. His toughest challenge was overcoming the highly political nature of the 44 voters on the Hall of Fame committee. His new memoir, Promises to Keep, details his remarkable journey from growing up in poverty in Connecticut to earning professional football's highest honor. It's published by Triumph Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Floyd Little to our show today. Hello.
Very good. Thank you so much for that great introduction. That's great. Thank you.
You've called your book Promises to Keep because of the two main incidents that you cite as important to your life, a promise to your father and a second promise to Ernie Davis. Yeah.
There were several promises during my journey that I kept. Those are the two big ones. My father, who had passed away when I was six.
What had he done for a living? He wasn't an athlete, was he?
No, he wasn't an athlete. He worked as a cleaner and he worked as a jack of all trades. He was a presser in the laundry.
So he hadn't gone to college either?
No. He's from North Carolina and he had a tough life. And he had six kids. And he died when I was very young. And I was rebellious, got in a lot of trouble. Got in fights at school and a couple of fights with teachers. And I got kicked out of school. And as I sat on the sidewalk pondering what I was going to say to my mom when I got home to kind of avoid her giving me the licks that I'd certainly deserved, and there was a vision from my late father that came to me. And it said, Floyd, what are you doing? I've chosen you to take my place and to do what I didn't do and to finish what I didn't finish. You need to get yourself back. And it was a visual picture of my dad in total great health. And I gathered myself, and I begged my way back into school. And that day I became a leader in all that I did. And that was a promise I made to my dad.
But that was before you discovered that you had something like photographic memory and actually could really do well in school.
Yeah. Well, I did. Ernie Davis, after being recruited by General MacArthur right here in New York at the Waldorf, I was at his suite, along with a lot of the great Yankee players and Dodger players.
But General MacArthur brought you to the Waldorf?
No, he lived in the Waldorf. Yeah. And I was in military school at the time, and Paul Dietzel was the coach, and I got an appointment to West Point by Senator Humphreys before he became vice president to Johnson in 1962. And I met with General MacArthur in his room at the Waldorf. And he guaranteed me if I went to West Point that I'd become the first African-American general. Now, when you flash back, look at that, if I had gone to West Point, I would have been Colin Powell's boss, General Petraeus' boss, and Norman Schwarzkopf's boss, if I had gone. But what happened was...
I bet you don't regret that didn't happen.
Well, Ernie Davis came to my house right after he had signed with the Browns and won the Heisman and had just met with President John Kennedy. And he came to my house 2 days after leaving West Point, and I was determined to go to West Point. And after having a conversation with Ernie, and he kept me in the men's room having this conversation while we had ordered steak and lobster, and my lobster and steak was getting cold. And I looked at Ernie and says, okay, I'll go to Syracuse. Let's go eat. And, of course, 3 months later, he passed away.
He had leukemia.
He had leukemia. Nobody knew. I didn't know. And that's a promise that I had to keep.
And he was part of a tradition at Syracuse.
Yep.
Syracuse had produced some of the greatest running backs in the history of football.
Yep. We had some good ones.
Jim Brown before.
Jim Brown, Ernie Davis, you had me, you had Joe Morris, you had Rob Conrad. You had great. Moose Johnson, Larry Zonka, Tom Coughlin.
Tom Coughlin, now the coach of the New York Giants.
He was my wing back. He and I and Larry was in the same backfield. And
oh, my God.
When he becomes eligible for Pro Football Hall of Fame, we would be the only college backfield in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Now, when did you start playing football?
I started when I was like 12, 13.
Is it true that your mother didn't know that you'd been playing until you received a scholarship offer to go to Syracuse?
No, she didn't know until my sisters brought her up to a game. And they saw me play against Kansas, and I scored 5 touchdowns against the great Gale Sayers' team. And my mom was like, who told him he could play? She didn't know I was playing until she saw me. And then after the game, she says, "You're pretty good. You're pretty good." So she never scolded me for crossing her and playing football when she didn't want me to play.
She wouldn't want you to play because you were considered a little small for
the game? She said I was too small and I would get hurt.
So how did you keep it a secret all those years?
Well, my mom, you know, she had 13 brothers and sisters from South Carolina, and she had to quit school in third grade and take care of her. She was the oldest of 13, and she didn't read that well. So all of the press clippings and all the paper, she never looked at them, so she really never knew. And my sisters kept it from her. If my clothes was torn, they would sew them up. She never knew that Saturdays for high school football or Friday nights, that's where I was, because I also worked in a store down the street when I was like 12, 13. So she never knew that I was playing football.
This was in Connecticut.
This was in New Haven, Connecticut.
You had to go to Bordentown Military Academy before you attended Syracuse.
Yeah, well,
why?
Because I had my grades were dismal at best, and it wasn't college material. And our counselor said that, you know, I had people asking about me. She says he can't go to college. His IQ wasn't high enough, and he would never be a college student.
Your IQ wasn't high enough?
82, just above an imbecile. I was an idiot.
So was that because you couldn't read at the time?
Yeah, reading was challenging, and a lot of other things. You know, I worked hard and took care of family, took care of my I was next to the youngest in the family of six, and I worked every day and took care of my siblings and my mom.
So when you went to Bordentown, I'm assuming you raised your IQ level, among other things.
Well, yeah, I was the first African American to go to Bordentown Military, and they desegregated the school for me. And
so that meant you were facing a certain kind of some hostility.
I did. I had a couple of altercations, but I maintained a level of respect, and I stayed in school, and it took me 2 years.
And that's where you discovered you had this photographic memory?
Yeah. When I took the SATs and I thought that I had aced it, and when I got my scores, it was 200. And I thought that I had got 100 in math and 100 in verbal, not knowing that you can get 800 in math, 800 in verbal. So the thing is, I inquired about it, and they said that they give it 5 times a year. So I says, well, okay, I'll just take it the next time. And I took it the next time, and it was a different test. So I memorized the test. And the other 2 times I took it were a different test. The last time I took it was the same test I took the second time. And I went from 200 to 1,300.
Now, having a photographic memory is also good when you are given a playbook in football, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't very seldom blew any plays. The only time I would blow a play was I missed a count if it was on two. But typically in football, the count is always two. Anytime it go, when you see guys jump off sides, they change the count. It's either on the first sound or one. You get guys jumping off sides because it's mentally embedded in your head that the snap count is always two. It's just like if you get dinged or they call you get your bell rang. When the doctors in my day ask you if you're okay, how many fingers are up, you can close your eyes and say two. It was never anything but two. So it was always two. If your eyes were closed, how many fingers are up? It's two.
But that also gives the other side an advantage, doesn't it? If you know it's always two, then they know it's always two.
Yeah, and that's why you see them jump off sides when they change it up. Because if it's on the first sound, they're waiting for two, and sometimes the ball is snapped before that.
My guest is Floyd Little, who has written a book with the help of Tom Mackey called Promises to Keep, My Inspired Run from Syracuse to Denver to the Hall. It has a foreword by Tom Coughlin, the coach of the New York Giants. It's published by Triumph. When you arrived at Syracuse as a freshman, you weren't allowed to play for your first year. The rules have changed since then.
The rules have changed.
Have you wondered what your life would have been like if you had
played it, 4 years?
Yeah.
It would have been unbelievable. And the fact that I didn't get a first year to play, I'm asking if I can take that year now so I can have my fourth year. So I think it would have been different. We had a schedule of 6 games as freshmen that we played. We played Penn State, West Point, Colgate, other schools, Manly Military. We were undefeated. And it was my freshman year, when I saw Syracuse play a homecoming game against Penn State. And that's when Ernie Davis presented her trophy, Ernie Davis's Heisman trophy to the university. I escorted her on the field to do that. I remember that day like it was yesterday.
you were your coach Schwartz Walter helped African American players achieve prominence in the late 50s and early 60s. Did he make it a special point to help kids like you?
Well, he was challenged because he was from the coal mines of West Virginia, and it was a different way of treating people of color in those days. He had an issue with Jim Brown that he didn't play, you know, in his sophomore and junior year. Jim only played in his senior year. He was a starter. Can you imagine you got a Jim Brown on the bench for 2 years? But he started, and one of the big things was that he and the coach didn't get along because of his antics off the field. But he did step up and go out to recruit Ernie Davis. And Ernie Davis and coach had some issues, and Ernie addressed them with the coach. But their opportunity with that coach allowed me to have a free reign because all of the things that they did, it created a great opportunity for me to have a great relationship with Coach Walter Walter.
Well, football was still integrating in many parts of the country, although not Syracuse. Well, but you played in the Sugar Bowl in 1965 against Louisiana State. What was it like to go to New Orleans at that time?
Unbelievable. We trained at military base, Pensacola military base, because we weren't welcome in downtown Louisiana on downtown New Orleans, because when we did go in the day before the game, we were not allowed to go places on Canal Street and other places. I was insulted when I went into one of the men's stores and we were looking at all buying the same hat and so on and so forth. And I went to drink out of the water fountain, and a guy scolded me because I was drinking out of a fountain that was for white only. And I was really disappointed because I was never exposed to racism before. This is the first time in my life being exposed to racism.
This is right before the Civil Rights Act was passed?
Yeah, 1964, yeah. And then I go into Walgreens right there on Canal Street and I forget the cross street, but I went in there with two white players and three black ones. They gave us three Cokes in a cup and two in a glass and told us we had to drink ours outside. I was just, for me, a kid from Connecticut, to be exposed to that, I could not believe that that existed.
Even though Bordentown had exposed racism before.
Bordentown did, and some of the cadets that were from Georgia that I had some altercations with. But the town itself in New Jersey, it was totally welcoming.
And your coach changed the game plan, made more of a passing game?
Against LSU. I mean, we were, Jim Nance was my fullback. Billy Hunter, who is the executive director of the NBA.
Jim Nance was your fullback?
Oh, yeah. Jimmy was my fullback before Larry Zaka and Billy Hunter.
They must have opened a lot of holes for you.
Oh, are you kidding? I mean, I could walk through, I can have lunch going through. But we figured we're going to fool LSU and we're going to throw the ball. And I carried the ball maybe five times during the whole game. And it was embarrassing because we lost by two touchdowns, and we were a much better team than LSU. But we never ran the ball. We threw it too many times.
Was it? Do you think he was protecting you?
No, he wasn't protecting me. He just figured out that he was going to try and beat him by the pass. And we didn't throw the ball. And we did the same thing when we played in the Gator Bowl. I had 200 and some odd yards, and Larry's like, I had 216, 17 yards. Larry had 175, and Tom had 44, Tom Coughlin. And we lost 16-12.
You were then drafted by the Denver Broncos, played there, had a wonderful career.
Yeah, I did.
Became the seventh best yard gainer in the history of the game.
Yes.
And you retired in 1970. They weren't great teams, but you were a great runner.
Right.
You retired in 1975, yeah. One of the most prolific running backs to ever play. But you weren't inducted into the Hall of Fame until 2010.
Yeah, never even nominated.
Do you have any idea why?
I played with 17 quarterbacks and 50 offensive linemen, and we didn't have a great team. And they just were being in the Midwest. We wasn't.
But yardage is yardage.
Well, I know.
You were playing in the other teams.
But the criteria for Hall of Fame considerations is how many Super Bowls you played, and never got to a Super Bowl. So
how did you get past that? I know Tom Mackey, who wrote this book with you, really helped.
Tom did a great job. I was Tom's hero, and ever since he was seven, his brother wouldn't let him be a Dallas Cowboy fan, so he had to pick another team that had cowboy in it. So he found one that had Bronco in it. And he chose me as his hero. And when he became 40 years old, his wife asked him, what did he want for his 40th birthday? She would give him anything she could. And he said, I wanted to meet my hero. And she said, who's that? Floyd Little. So she flew him from D.C. to have lunch with me in California. And he sat there, and we just looked, and he never asked a whole lot of questions. But he did write. He was an independent writer, and he still is. He wrote some articles that went to paper, and it didn't do anything. He talked about the statistics and so on and so forth. It didn't help. So he put together a 44 reasons why I should be in a calendar, and it didn't help. And then he talked to 44 Hall of Famers who played against me, and to the man, they each said, oh, yeah, he should have been in. John Mackey wrote a letter, if you can't find a place for Floyd Little in Pro Football Hall of Fame, take me out and put him in. Let's validate what this thing should be. So all of the things that Tom had, and then we did a book, Tales from the Broncos Sideline, before this book. Mm-hmm. But Tom really did a great job in getting me the notice by those that didn't see me play, the writers that wasn't voting, and he was able to bring me back from nowhere so that people can know who I was.
Were you ever tempted to leave Denver, which was not a winning team until Elway, I guess?
No, you're right. And I had many opportunities from the Jets, the Giants, the New Orleans Saints, Kansas City. The Raiders were always trying to get me, Cleveland. I was loyal to my fans and to my teammates.
And that hurt you
in
this case.
Loyalty doesn't go very far, but it's still for me. It wasn't about the dollars. It's about those people that came to support us. So I stayed there and played for the Broncos my entire career.
A recent study indicates that football players are more susceptible coming down with depression, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. Are you concerned about how the game can be made safer for players?
Yeah, and I think they do.
Because you're still
job.
In football. You're at Syracuse.
Yeah, I'm at Syracuse, special assistant to the athletic director, and have a chance to talk to all athletes. But I think that Roger Goodell is one unbelievable commissioner. He will find a way to make the game safer. I like what he's done with the hits. I like with the fines. I like all the things he's done for the bounties. And I talk about bounties in the books before they even exposed that.
You had bounties.
What is a bounty on me? And my team, some of my friends that I train with during the off season would tell me it was $1,500 if they can get me out of the game. And they would tell me. And Well, yeah. I mean, especially when we, I signed with Denver for $10,000. My first 3 years was $23,000, $26,000, $28,000. I never made more than $75,000 in 9 years. It was my maximum pay.
You were born too early.
I know. I want to sue my parents for having me too soon. But yeah, I'm not concerned. I think the game. I mean, we looked at those concussions as getting your bell ring. But it's real serious. They got to make better equipment. They got to do better things. I think Commissioner Goodell is doing a lot to make the game safer.
Although it might help if the real officials are brought back.
But that's It can't hurt.
Floyd Little's book, written with the help of Tom Mackey, is Promises to Keep. And it is published by Triumph. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's been a great honor. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.